Three, two, one.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, April 24, 2008. It's now 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic oversized and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good morning, everyone. I encourage you to get to call in this morning. This morning we'll have Andy Sutton, Chief Strategist for Sutton & Associates, talking about the worldwide food shortages and hunger strikes that are occurring around the world and the significance of that. Please call in 664-652-4620 with your comments and questions. That's 646-652-4620. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses the economic issues worldwide and how they affect you. I also would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscriber icon. Also, you can send, if you don't want to send email, you can go to our website. We have a blog, and you can comment on the blog, and I will respond back to you or respond during our next broadcast. Fair enough? Okay, very good. I got some flack regarding last Sunday night's broadcast regarding immigration. One comment I received, a fellow called in and said, well, why don't you allow all these doctors and lawyers and these professionals to come in and have everyone come in as much as they want, and I guess everything would be okay. And my response is that I think we lost a point there. My point was not we allow everybody in, but we change our thinking regarding immigration. We have to change our thinking. And I think we have Andy Sutton on the line. Let's see if it's him.
Joe, how you doing?
Andy, good morning. Thank you so much for getting up on this ungodly hour to be on our program. we are honored and privileged to have you here this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
That's great. Well, that's wonderful, Andy. Andy, I hardly gave you an introduction, but I'll do this once again. Folks, Andy Sutton is the Chief Strategist for Sutton & Associates, and he also publishes a couple of newsletters. One is an online newsletter, and it's free of charge. It is fantastic. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not just saying this. I read, you know, dozens and dozens of newsletters every month. This is the best. I mean, it's clear, it's concise. It's not wacko, and it's very well balanced. I really appreciate and always look forward to it. But more importantly, he does have a subscriber newsletter, and that's the Sensible Investor. Is that correct, Andy? Sensible Investor.
That's correct, yes.
And where he also gives advice, and you can also email him with your questions when you're a subscriber, which is really fantastic, because then you can get one-on-one advice from an expert, not somebody like me who is an unexpert. Welcome.
We appreciate the kind words.
Oh, it's well deserved, Andy. Well deserved. Well, this morning we are going to talk about the latest news item. In fact, this morning when I got up, I turned on CNBC, which I don't like to watch. I don't know why I do that, but
you start your day off wrong doing that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly right. I watch. I go, you know, why am I listening to these clowns? But they did have a, and I'm sorry, I did not catch the guy's name. He was talking about the worldwide food crisis, and I'm going to let you. We have about 25 minutes, Andy. I'm going to give you all 25 minutes, but I'll just start off by saying, he said, it's overblown in a way, because anytime anyone says this is a limited edition, you have a run on it. It can be anything. It can be a toy. If there's someone says there's going to be a limited edition toy or they're only going to make so many, the first thing people do is go out and buy it. And he feels somewhat, not all, but somewhat, that is what is happening with the world food crisis. Okay, you can take it away now.
Well, I think there's a good bit of truth to what to what that gentleman said. I mean, you know, as soon as you hear the word shortage, you know, what's your, you know, especially when it's a staple item like food, I mean, what's your first instinct? Oh my gosh, I better go out and get a bunch, right? You know, so I think there's a certain amount of truth to that, but the underlying problem here is, you know, I've spent the last couple of days doing a little bit of research on this, and I actually talked to some people on the West Coast where this is, you know, kind of going on right now, and apparently our stocks of not just rice but wheat and, you know, corn. I mean, you've talked about corn on your show a lot, you know, and the whole issue with the ethanol. You know, our food stocks are low to the point where it's kind of like the whole oil and energy situation right now. If you have a little bit of a hiccup in the supply chain, you get a shortage. And essentially what happened here is it looks like that Australia had a bit of a drought last year.
Right.
And Australia is a major exporter of wheat, but to a minor extent, they are an exporter of rice. And what ended up happening was that little blip, I mean, they're not the number one rice exporter by any means, but what ended up happening was that little bit of a blip caused other countries to say, uh-oh, we better hang on to ours instead of exporting so much of ours. You know, Vietnam, some of these other countries, they started holding on to their rice, and what happened was, is it boom, 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 now you've got a shortage.
Right.
And you're seeing rationing. And I picked up three articles on the mainstream press about this. One was from the Washington Times, and, you know, they talked a lot about the wheat stocks, and apparently, you know, the farmers lobby is hollering at the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, you know, trying to get them to put a cap on this speculation because they think this whole thing is just a big investment bubble.
Ah.
Right? They're totally missing the boat. Another article was from NBC 11, and it was San Francisco Bay, and there was voluntary rationing of rice in that area, and basically what they were doing is just asking people not to hoard.
Right.
Just buy whatever it is you normally buy, because, you know, those are big, there's a lot of Asian population out there, and, you know, the restaurateurs and, you know, some of these other people, you know, they buy a lot of rice.
Right.
And what they were asking people to do there is, look, just, you know, buy what you normally buy, don't go crazy, don't hoard it, as long as everybody, you know, kind of keeps their head about them, you know, this won't get out of hand. So that's what's going on there. Now, I have a good friend up in Seattle, Washington, and it seems like in Seattle, things are a little bit worse. Things are a little bit more dire. He's been scouring the area up there and has had a hard time finding any kind of rice. Huh. You know, and there's apparently a big Asian population in Seattle as well, and not only is it rice up there, but to a lesser extent, it's also flour and cooking oil that they're having issues with. You know, and this has not been publicized.
Right.
You know, the rice issue has gotten a fair amount of play, but the flour and the cooking oil issue has not. Now, I'm not saying this to try to touch off a panic. I mean, people need to understand that, you know, this is the world we live in, unfortunately. You know, it's the same thing with gasoline. You know, if there's a little bit of a refinery outage or a little bit of a, you know, supply hiccup, you know, there's a storm or, you know, any kind of political situation, you know what's been going on over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You get a spike in the price. You know, this seems to be this, you know, this whole just-in-time delivery
right.
system, and it's being applied to things that, you know, it's not widgets anymore. Now it's people's food and people's energy, and, you know, that has a big impact when things don't go well.
Yeah. What are the causes of the food shortage? I'm sure it's just not one item. For example, just the weather. There must be several of them. What are some of those influences on the price of food?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the United States, I mean, you know, the ethanol issue has been pretty well popularized.
Right.
It's been talked about. You know, we're looking at a situation where there's more and more people. You know, there's fairly a fairly fixed amount of cropland that's available, and we've decided and we've made a conscious decision that we're going to burn our food supply.
Yeah.
To ostensibly lower gas prices, which incidentally isn't helping.
Yeah.
You know, so we've made that conscious decision in this country. In other countries, Brazil, for example, uses a lot of sugar beets, and that's how they get that's how they do a good portion of their ethanol production. They grow sugar beets, and then they use the sugar from that to get the ethanol,
right.
Which is quite a bit more efficient than corn, but you have the same problem. You know, we need more and more energy, so we dedicate more and more of our crop resources to growing sugar beets.
Right.
So, and what this does is not only, you know, does the demand drive up the price of the sugar beets and the resultant ethanol, but because you have more and more cropland dedicated to that, you have less dedicated to everything else, so it drives the price of everything else up. So you've,
right.
You've got this kind of double whammy effect going on here.
Do you recall a book written by, and I think his name was Howard Ruff. I'm going back about 30, 35 years in time. It was called The Crash of 79.
No, I don't remember. I never read.
You're
that
too
one.
Young. I can see that. But I had never read a book like that, and I don't know how I picked it up, but I wound up buying the book and reading it. I don't know where it is these days, but and he talked about, you know, a crash and economic crash and, you know, almost Armageddon in a way, but he did talk extensively, from what I recall, about the interruption of the food chain and how easily it could be broken and how susceptible we are to a food disruption. And that's why he encouraged people always to have a stock of food and rotate it constantly. I don't know how many months, but always on hand and rotate it. Now, believe it or not, I did that. But what I did is I put all the food in the closet upstairs, and it all rotted on me. I didn't do it very well. Yeah, and I, you know, it's stupid. And now, I just found it the other day. I went, oh my goodness, this food's been here for 100 years, and I'm not going to open these cans and eat it, that's for sure. So every day I throw away a bunch of cans just to get rid of the stuff because I know it's no good anymore. But, I mean, he subscribed to that, but that was 79. Now, do you think we may be looking at the crash of 09?
Again, you know, you don't want to be overly speculative and touch off some kind of an unwarranted panic. I mean, people need to understand some of the dynamics that affect, you know, the food supply now. It's not just, you know, it's not just oil, and it's not just energy, it's not just natural gas. See, the problem with food is you have a lot more factors to play in. I mean, you've got all the same factors that you have with energy. You've got, you know, the ability to produce it, you've got the political issues, you've got, you know, regulatory issues, transportation, all of that stuff. But with food, to a larger extent, I think, than energy, you have to throw in the weather, too.
Right.
And, you know, some of these areas that are, you know, corn belts, wheat belts, whatever, are starting to see some pretty dramatic variations in their weather. I don't know what the cause of that is. You know, that's not somewhere that, you know, that's not really the direction that we need to go, you know, with this discussion. But for whatever reason, you know, the weather is playing a dynamic in food production.
Yep.
You know, and then you've got the whole ethanol thing. So you have a lot of factors that are kind of tugging at this. The world's population is growing. The Far Eastern populations are starting to see some wealth. And generally what happens when people start to get a little bit of money is they eat more meat.
Right.
And as they eat more meat, you know, that's going to raise the demand on grains as well, because, you know, those animals, you know, that these people are going to start to eat, they consume a lot of grain, corn, wheat, things like that.
Yeah,
there's a lot of different things going on here.
I have an email, and it says, Thanks for putting on a program with a refreshing point of view. Since you are having a market/financial strategist on your show, I'd like to know how the food shortage around the world would affect the stock market short term, for example, 6 months, and longer terms, let's say 2 years. Thanks. Karen from Chattanooga. You have any comments on that?
That's a good question. Short term, what we're seeing right now is almost no effect. Long term, you know, as far as the stock market goes, I mean, you've got, you know, the obvious solution here would be, well, you know, this could be an investment play. You know, we could jump into food companies. One of the biggest problems with just making that jump blindly is that a lot of these food companies are seeing, you know, the prices that they can command for their items go up, but they're also seeing the price of their inputs go up commensurately,
right,
which means that they're not, you know, that the margins aren't changing a lot, and in a lot of cases, the margins are getting squeezed,
right,
because the companies are trying not to pass on as much of these price increases, like, because they want to keep their customers. You know, especially, you know, with, you know, believe it or not, there are discretionary foods. You know, you've got your basic foods, and then you kind of have your top shelf foods, your upper shelf foods. You know, so these people, you know, they're competing for market dollars. And, you know, so they're trying to pass on as little of the increases that they're seeing as possible. So they're, as a result, their margins are getting squeezed. Now, one place where people have decided to try to make an investment play, and this is what the farmer lobby was complaining about, people are getting directly into commodity food futures, which is risky business.
Right.
There's a couple of ETFs out there. I am suspicious that they're going to see a lot more because, you know, it's one of those things, you know, you get a hot play on something and all of a sudden everybody's going to want to have a fund.
Right.
So it's my guess that you're going to see more and more of those ETFs, which is good for investors because we'll have more choices. But some people are going in and playing the futures directly, you know, which can be risky. You know, like I said, there are some ETFs that are coming out there, some specialized funds that people can take advantage of to get in and play the commodities. If you want to make money off this, you know, if you're looking for, you know, an immediate return, I think your best bet is to try and, you know, work that side of it rather than work the output side, you know, by going in and, you know, buying a ConAgra or somebody like that.
Okay, very good. And Karen, if you are listening, you can call in now, 646-652-4620, and discuss that with Andy further if you would like. What I hear here locally, and I always ask people questions when, especially if I'm in a restaurant, you know, how's business, you know, how's your volume and whatever. And sometimes I'm lucky enough to speak to the manager, you know, which, and they typically know a little bit more of the situation with the restaurant. And what I hear here in Tulsa, and Tulsa has not been hard hit at all on anything. It's been relatively stable. We didn't have a mortgage crisis here or anything, but yet I hear from everyone that, geez, things are very tight. Restaurants are down. I mean, you go to restaurants, they're not as crowded as they used to be. Their volumes are down. And it seems that what we have here, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, is that we already have a situation where people's not only discretionary income, but the, you know, income that they use for everyday staple items is being reduced. They're going out, and now food is costing a little bit more. Thus, they're going out a little bit more to restaurants. So now restaurants aren't doing as well. Don't we see a slight chain reaction on this thing? Once the consumer starts holding back, in fact, this morning I heard Amazon had disappointing results. Starbucks had very disappointing results. And is this not only an indication of people saying, well, you know, I won't spend $100 a week out, I'll spend maybe $75, and that has that chain effect?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you're seeing. I mean, we're seeing the same thing here in our restaurants in this area. You know, I try to get out and, you know, put my finger to the wind, if you will, just to, you know, get an idea of what the consumer is doing, because so much of what our economy is able to produce now is based on the consumer. So, you know, in my opinion, I think it's a good idea, you know, to whatever extent possible, to understand, you know, where the consumer's at, where their mindset is at. You know, so I like to go out and, you know, talk to people, talk to restaurant owners, talk to waiters, talk to waitresses, you know, find out what's going on. And we're seeing the exact same thing you're seeing here. Business is slow right now. Now,
right,
part of that is because, you know, we're in a recession.
Right.
The other part of that is kind of a myth that you won't hear on a lot of the mainstream, which is, you know, if you have a recession, that automatically means that inflation will be reduced.
Right.
And that is playing out to be totally 100% patently false
right
now. because we've been slowing down economically for, you know, a good, you know, 2 to 3 quarters now, and prices aren't. Prices are going the opposite direction. And this is basically a result of what's been going on over the last couple of years, you know, in particular, you know, with all the money and credit creation.
Right.
You know, that has to go somewhere.
Right.
And when it stops going into assets, it goes into consumer prices. And for a long time, it was going into housing. You know, and that was good. That's good, and that's quote-unquote good inflation because, oh, I'm getting rich because my house is going up in value. But
right.
Now it's going into food and gasoline and health care and all these other things, and that's the bad inflation. This is the phase of the inflationary cycle that is unpleasant.
Right.
You know, because people are starting to feel economic pain.
Your point
about the restaurants is very valid. Now, the kicker with food, and to some degree, you know, to energy as well, is they're staple goods. People have to eat. But what you get into is a discussion of, well, if I'm not going to Starbucks, and by the way, I consider Starbucks to be one of the top leading economic indicators.
That's interesting. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, if you see Starbucks complaining about profits, which we did this morning, I put an article on my website about that. If you see Starbucks warning about profits, look out. That means, you know, they're the ones that charge the $5 and $6 for the cup of coffee. That gives you a very good insight into what consumers are doing with their discretionary funds. You know, that's telling me that consumers are starting to pull back.
Well, it was interesting. I was at Starbucks.
Places like Starbucks will get hit first.
Yeah, there's a Starbucks next to me, and I just sometimes just take my motorcycle down there, have a cup of coffee, and read. Yeah, I'll bring a bunch of articles with me from my station. I read, and I spend about an hour down there once in a while. I bought a cup of coffee, and I went for a refill, and they usually charge $1 for a refill or something like that. He says, "Oh no, it's free. Go for it." You know, and I was wondering whether or not that was their attempt to lure in customers, because they're going through this big customer relations, you know, marketing, you know, attempt, and maybe they're telling people, listen, if they want to drink the coffee, have them drink the coffee, just bring them in the place, you know. And I'm wondering if that's
a way
of reducing price, you know, of discounting their coffee without discounting the price.
For sure, yeah, give them free refills. You know, some people will take advantage of it, some people won't. You know, it's a good customer relations thing, but the point there is they don't need to do that when times are good.
All right. Andy, I'm going to change I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. I'm awfully sorry.
You know, people will pay for that refill, you know, when times are good. When they perceive there to be, you know, economic difficulties ahead or they're experiencing current economic difficulties, they won't do that. And that's how that's how you know, a company like Starbucks will react to that.
Yeah. You know, it's strange. We're kind of insulated from this food hunger crisis because only about 7% of our income goes for food. And in other parts of the world, it's 70 to 90%, especially in the third world countries. So if food goes up 10%, big deal. Now it's $8, you know, 8%, big deal. Right? But to other countries, that means they go from subsistence eating to starving.
Right.
And we don't appreciate, you know, the extent of this food shortage.
No, we don't. You know, and this is one of the factors. You know, Americans spend, you know, comparatively little on food, but at the same time, you know, all of our income is being used on other items.
Right.
You know, whereas in other parts of the country, they use most of their money on food, but they don't necessarily have a lot of these other items.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a situation where, you know, from a purely economic and budgetary standpoint, you know, nobody can really afford higher food prices, but they can afford it even less than we can because we can give up other stuff.
Right. Although we're probably unwilling to do so. Let me just...
Well, right now, yeah.
You know, we're not going to lose some of the stuff that we own. A friend of mine just became... sells cars. He hasn't sold a car all month, by the way, and I think the auto industry is going to get hit very, very hard because if people are struggling, they're not going to go out and buy a new SUV, that's for sure. And I'm going to be very interested to see what the six-month sales are for, you know, GM, Toyota, and Ford, and Chrysler. It's going to be a very interesting indicator. Let me change the subject. We have about 4 or 5 minutes. The solution to this problem, I'm going to give you the solution to this problem, to the worldwide food shortage. and that is get all governments out of the food business worldwide. And when I say that, let the market adjust. For example, we right now, the government, not us personally, now we may give personally, you and I may give personally to a fund that helps feed the poor and whatever. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about government sending millions or billions of dollars worth of aid to third world countries. What we in fact do, if there is a country that cannot support itself and we supply them with food, we encourage them to continue doing what they had been doing before, which is the wrong thing. If we just let every country stand on its own, would they not eventually each country adjust us? Well, I know in a dictatorship you don't have much of a choice, but I mean, given a free market economy and a democratic form of government, hopefully, wouldn't each country adjust to its population, to its food needs and whatever, independent, or trade for food with something else, with their populations, just like anything else, would their populations then possibly recede to a point where their food production can support the population they have, rather than the artificial injection of food into a country, increasing the population, then when there's a shortage, a lot of people starve. Your take on it.
And that's a good point that you brought up, because we have pumped so much food into a lot of the third world countries, we've actually encouraged population growth that would have been unsustainable otherwise.
Right.
You know, and then you see, you know, the result of that when that food supply is curtailed for whatever reason, you know, you get to watch, you know, on TV, you know, the small children, and it is heartbreaking. But the thing, I mean, you're right to a degree, is it, you know, those subsidies actually cause a lot of that. You know, we give too much and we create this illusion that there's prosperity and there's wealth there. And there really isn't. And then, of course, once you start doing it, you can't stop.
Right.
You know, if you're giving automobiles to a country, you know, you can stop that a little bit easier than if you're providing them with sustenance and food. You know, your point about the what's going to happen, you know, if we just let the, you know, got government out of it and let the markets adjust normally, what you would end up having is you would see. Some countries, you know, that have other factors of production, you know, they have either land, labor, or capital, or entrepreneurship, you know, they would be able to trade those for the necessary food items. There are several dozen countries or areas that really don't have any factors of production.
Yeah.
That they can trade. And that's kind of been the hot spots for the food problems and the starvations over the years. You know, you've got countries where you don't have arable land, you don't really have a huge population, and what population you have is unhealthy, you know, because they don't have enough food. You know, there's not a lot of natural resources there. There's just not a lot to work with in terms of trading. And you know, one of the reasons that government is given for getting involved there is like, well, if we don't do something, these people are going to die.
Right.
You know, and there's certainly, and from a humane standpoint, there certainly is a justification for doing that. But unfortunately, you know, it gets back to what I said before. Then you have a situation where you have populations growing that shouldn't necessarily be growing because they don't have own resources to support.
They don't have the resources to support it. Andy, we only have about 1 minute left. Let me give this 1 minute to you to promote your website, what you're doing right now, and then we can go off the air, okay?
Well, I mean, you pretty much summed it up. I mean, Sutton Associates is a registered investment advisor here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We do work with a limited amount of clients that are out of state, based on the applicable regulatory environment laws, things of that nature. Our monthly newsletter, The Sensible Investor, right now we're running a special of $39 a year, $69 for 2 years. And essentially what we're doing there is giving insight into, you know, some of these different markets, energy markets, precious metals markets, financial markets. And what we're also doing is constructing a model portfolio within that newsletter. It's certainly not personalized to any particular person. It's a model portfolio that we believe will hold up over time and enable people to combat inflation.
Okay, very good. Andy, thank you so much for being our guest this morning, and I'll be talking with you later, okay?
Joe, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to speak to your audience.
All right, thank you. Good night. Good morning.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Andy Sutton, of our chief strategist for Sutton & Associates, giving his opinion of the worldwide food crisis. And folks, although we lost one of our platforms and we no longer have a phone line because we just got shut off, what I'd like to mention is that what we see happening here is it's easy to overemphasize the or exaggerate the food shortage situation. However, we seem to have a confluence of events, none of which are very attractive, which are feeding one on the other. We have more people, thus more people eating better. Being better means raising more cattle, which takes more grain. We have people who are increasing their incomes, which means they are buying automobiles, which takes fuel, which we have plenty of worldwide, but it's getting a little expensive to find, and it's getting a little bit more expensive to transport, etc. We are now using cropland to feed our cars, which I think is which always has been a big mistake. I've screamed about that from the first time that I've heard it. And we do have the high cost of energy, plus the high cost of governments around the world. Governments just tend to think that they can solve problems by printing more money and giving more money out rather than the having the market stabilize the situation. We don't have that in hardly any country any longer, and we certainly don't have it in the United States. My concern is that this confluence of events will continue, and each will exasperate the other, until something very unexpected happened, an additional event will occur. And that additional event, in my opinion, will be a trigger, which will start this domino effect. In the 1930s, they talked about a confluence of events, which is more unlikely to reoccur. And they are correct. They are not reoccurring, but different confluences of events are occurring right now, and they're even worse than they were in the 1930s. I fear we are on the wrong course. We must really protect ourselves. Now, Andy Sutton and his newsletter can help you do that. And I'm not just saying that just to promote his website, but it is necessary for you to understand what is going on. People in my own family I talk to, and they look at me like I'm from the planet Mars, or a planet that they never heard of before. I mean, they yes me to death, but they don't do anything. And I just know in my heart of hearts that someday my preparation will pay off somewhat for my family. I spoke with my youngest unmarried son last night. He's going to be married very soon, by the way. But he, after I talked to him for a while, he said, "Well, you had enough to say now let me talk." I mean, instead of saying, "Dad, that's a good point, bad point, I agree with you," it's like, "All right, you know, Dad's on his rant again, and I have to listen to him. I'll listen to him, but only so long, and then we're going to change the subject." And I was quite frankly disappointed. I was talking philosophy, and I kept on a pie. I said, "I just want to give you why I do what I do." And I said, "You know, you can do what you want. You have to do what you feel comfortable with." And it still didn't appease the situation much. And I think most people are the same way. I do encourage people very much so to take a very, 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 very hard look at what is going on. All right? Don't overreact. I mean, sometimes I overreact, and every time I do, I come out the loser, you know. So I've learned, you know, sit back and just, you know, watch the world go by, you know, slowly but surely, you know, be conscious. If you're just conscious of what is going on, you will be in the 0.1% of the people that know what's going on. Most people don't, right? Just watch yourself, please. And I want to thank you very much for listening to our program this morning. And if you're listening to us on a rebroadcast, please go to my blog and send me a note on the blog. Just go to the website, hit the blog, and then you can send a message via the blog. It's libertytalkradio.com. And also on the blog is where I post what our station was going to be talking about. This coming Sunday, we should have a gentleman who will be talking about an author, and he will be talking about the Veterans Affair, which should be very, very interesting. Please check my blog. You'll get all the information. I need to get the information about the author of the book, and it should be a fascinating conversation. Now, I'd like to remind everyone that if you are listening, please go to our website and hit the subscribe button. I don't sell any email addresses. All I do is you get this beautiful little reminder saying reminder for Liberty Talk Radio coming up, a little banner, and it gives you a short, usually within 35-word brief of what we are going to be talking about in the next program. You can click it off when you see it if you don't want to see it, but if you do want to see it, at least you'll know what's going on. Please do subscribe. I appreciate that. It would keep us in touch. You can always send me comments at Liberty Talk Radio, comments at libertytalkradio.com. Okay. Here we go. This is the end of this morning's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments at libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. And remember, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, live. By the way, we broadcast 24 hours a day on rebroadcast, but we'll be live on Sunday evening, 8 o'clock Central Daylight Time. Do join us. And until then, stay well. Stay tuned.